Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide daily over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So, stay tuned for tonight's special report on modern science and the Genesis record right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, and multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, President Bush, back in his time, said that what Americans wanted was jobs, jobs, jobs. You know, that's not what George Washington said, or Thomas Jefferson, or Ben Franklin, or Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote our Constitution, wrote our Bill of Rights, or wrote the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognized that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. It's not, never has been measured in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business. The money is in sales. It's not in public business, and it's certainly not in jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's why I contend that it's time that you and I cash in on our inheritance and learn how to collect the benefits that we're entitled to from this old covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in substance, like gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, which is called property, instead of this phony credit, debt, usury, inflation, and more worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for more information on our CD, Homeschool for Adults. That's our business school. And while you're at it, why don't you call and order our General Law CD package at the same time. That CD package is a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. That's the place to start. Doesn't cost you anything. Nobody's going to put you on a mailing list now and sell it to General Electric or somebody. It's informative. It's entertaining. It's educational, it's free, and you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right there. All right, we're talking about Creation Week. We're talking about Genesis 1 and 2 and whether or not it's scientific. Well, scientific means knowledge. Science means knowledge. So if it's scientific, then it's knowledgeable. Now, there are certain things that you and I can know. And we have five senses. You and I have five senses. We can see it, hear it, taste it, touch it, or smell it. Outside of those five senses, we cannot know it. Now, there's two ways that we can receive information into our brains. It can come by revelation, which is the purpose behind this thing called the Bible, the Scripture. The Creator, that is your Creator, the guy that made you, sent you an instruction booklet and said, "Let me explain the product to you." See, the day that Adam was created, he looked around. What in the hell did he know? Picture that. He looks around and he sees the garden. He sees trees. Does he know what a tree is? Does he know what a bird is? Does he know what he's supposed to do with birds and trees? He sees apples on a tree or oranges on a tree. Does he know what to do with them? So his creator comes over and says, "Hey, Adam, let me introduce myself. My name is God, and I just created you. You're a pretty good invention. I made you, and I determined that you're pretty good." Well, you and I have the same problem. It's complicated by parents and teachers preachers and politicians and others, because these guys come along and they say, "Hey, let me tell you where you came from. You came from the stork, or you came from your mommy's belly." No, you didn't. You're a creation. Coming from the stork is a fiction. Coming from your mommy's belly is a simplicity. Son, who made your mommy by which you could come from her belly? You know, let's go back to the origin of this thing. What got this process started? So, God sent an instruction manual. We call it the Bible. That's a bad name for it. It's actually the Scripture, but you know, If I use some of these terms, you know, it takes away, you know, from the average Joe Sixpack. He hadn't heard that before, so the common term, you know, is the Bible. And it's an instruction book. It's an instruction manual. It says, here's where you came from, and here's where you're going, and here's what the plan is. Here's what the agenda calls for. Here's the way to accomplish that, and here's the way to live. You know, thou shalt not commit adultery. That's the way to live. We come along and say, no, we want to go to Flo's Whorehouse and tear off a piece on Friday night. Well, okay, but that's saddled with, you know, a venereal disease. Now, 25% of America's youth have a sexually transmitted disease. They have venereal disease. It comes in many forms. It isn't just gonorrhea or syphilis. It comes, you know, in various forms like AIDS, herpes, VD, venereal warts, and so on. Now, we have sex education in our public schools, and they teach our children in our public schools that they should practice sodomy, lesbianism, alternative lifestyles. If it feels good, do it. And they do. They've experimented with that. And they told us that we've got premarital sex going on, we've got venereal disease, and we need to solve that problem in our public schools, as back in 1955 to 60, and we got to have sex education. They lobbied for that. These are the higher critics, and they got it. In those days, we had one girl in our public school, Eureka High School, that turned up pregnant before graduation. Her name was Vivian Westerman. Vivian, if you're listening, I'm telling tales out of school here on you. Only one girl. Now. That didn't exactly strike me as being a great epidemic of sexual impropriety or promiscuity, but they told us we needed to have sex education. Now, from one girl out of 305 nationally, and I imagine in Eureka High School is probably the same as it was when I was there, it's now 10% of the girls in school are pregnant before graduation. It's so prevalent in many big city schools, they have nurseries right in the school for these teenage moms to have their babies to have daycare. So it goes without saying that the law that said, thou shalt not commit adultery, don't practice fornication, was designed for an end result. That's to prevent premarital pregnancy. Now, we have a new program called Sex Education in Public Schools. We have 25% of the young people now with VD and 10% of them pregnant. If that's the end result that you wanted, my God, stick with the program. It's a proven winner. Now, if that isn't what you wanted, well, then maybe the instruction manual had some good information in it. All right, now use that as an example, because in the book of Romans, there's a story here, before we get on to the next chapter here, and this story deals with the higher critics, and it's Romans chapter 1, starts in verse 18, and it says, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who hold back the truth in unrighteousness. So these higher critics hold back the truth. See, they come to you and they say, hey, listen to us. We've got premarital pregnancy going on in school. We need sex education in your public school. Let us teach your sons and daughters sex education to prevent premarital pregnancy and venereal disease. Well, that sounds like a hell of a good idea. I would like to prevent premarital pregnancy. I would like to prevent venereal disease. And so we gave them the authority, and they went out and did it. Now, what's the results 50 years later? Now, 50 or 60 years later, we're unable to come to the conclusion that, hell, we were doing just fine. Maybe we had Vivian knocked up before graduation. But that was only one out of 305. Now we got 10%. We got 35 of them knocked up. That isn't what we signed on for. That isn't what we wanted to buy. Now, as a result of these higher critics over here, God, in Romans chapter 1 here, comes back with a pretty railing condemnation of that kind of behavior. These guys aren't ignorant. These guys had an agenda. They wanted 35 girls knocked up. They wanted to destroy the family and the family structure of America. And they have succeeded beyond their wildest expectations. And they succeeded because they persuaded us that the instruction book was faulty, that the instructions that we got from God couldn't be trusted. You can't trust that guy. He's a liar. Well, okay, well, now that we've tested sex education, found out God didn't lie to us at all, did he? He wasn't whistling Dixie through a straw hat here. He wasn't pissing into the wind. That's what the bottom line to that story was. But we have. You and I. We bought into this program over here. And I got to ask the question, well, why did we buy into the program? What made us think that he was lying to us? Now, when we take a critical analysis here of Genesis 1 and 2, we find out scientifically, we just did that. We took a look at the science of light and the science of meteorology and found out the instruction in Genesis 1 and 2 on the first 2 days of creation are exactly correct, and you're watching it, and you see it, and you live in it every day. And Romans chapter 1 is telling you a little story here. It's telling you that the creation is the proof of God. Oftentimes people write me emails or they call on the phone and they say, can you prove God exists? Yes, I can. And so can you. And the creation is the number one proof of the existence of God. Science is the number one proof of the existence of God. It's knowledge. So in the last program, we talked about the atmosphere. That is a miracle. That atmosphere is a phenomenon. That thing didn't just happen. That thing had to be carefully designed. It is carefully balanced. It works. It's a neat machine. It's like a new Ford automobile. It's a hell of a neat machine, and it works. And nobody in his right mind says, oh, it just put itself together. Just a volcanic eruption and a lot of shaking going on and an earthquake shook all the pieces and all the parts together, and there it is. I mean, you'd have to be a lunatic. You'd have to be a maniac to come up with a conclusion like that. To conclude that the atmosphere in its workings, which is a hell of a lot more complex than a new Ford car, came into existence by accident is suffering from terminal stupidity. Or as we say down here, that guy's suffering from the terminal stupids. All right, now let's go on a step further here. Day 3 comes up. And in day 3, God, this is the creator, the guy we call God, comes up with the creation of the oceans. And he says, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind, whose seed is in itself, upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed, and the fruit tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind. And God saw that it was good. And the evening and the morning were the third day. You'll notice that each one of these days he separates. He says, here's what I did on day one. I created light. Here's what I did on day two. I created the firmament. Here's what I did on day three. I created the dry land and the plants with their seed. And then he identified each day. He said the evening and the morning were the first day, and the evening and the morning were the second day, and the evening and the morning. Now, boys and girls, wake up here. Have you ever seen the morning? Have you ever seen sunrise? You ever seen sunset? All right. Then you know that a day has about 12 hours and that a night has about 12 hours. Explain to me why you would think that this is 70,000 years. Now, I know somebody's going to say, well, I just don't believe he could do it in 24 hours. Well, I don't know why not. Notice, how long does it take to say this? Just listen to this. And God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together unto one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. How long did that take? 10 seconds. How long did it take to create the dry land? About 10 seconds. That's well within 24 hours. Now, what we're lacking here is, well, by what mechanism? Well, this guy's got billions of angels. Now, here on the farm, I have some hired help. And I go out to the foreman and I say, Mr. Foreman, here's what I want today. I want A, B, and C done. And he writes that down in his little notebook. I speak. And then I come back in the house and I sit down here and start making programs. And then when I get through making programs, I go out and watch and I look around and I see that what I have instructed has been done. Did I do it? No. No, I don't do any of it. And I said, I want you to go out into the North 40 and I want you to build that fence from the corral out to the corner. And I went out there 3 days later and there was the fence. And it was so. And it was good. And Mr. Gordon looked upon the fence and he saw that it was good and praised the foreman and the hired help. I mean, come on, guys, let's wake up and smell the coffee. God is the executive director. He's the guy that runs Goldman Sachs. He's not running the trading desk and saying, or getting on the telephone and saying to some guy, buy these CDOs. He's got employees that do that. He sends out a directive and he says, I think we want to get into this or that line of business. The guy that's running General Motors. Did you think that the chief executive officer at General Motors is down on the floor sticking pistons into blocks? Did you think that he's moving transmissions down the assembly line? He speaks at the executive level and says, here's what I want done. And then it goes down through a chain of command. And then ultimately, down here on the floor, there are thousands and thousands of employees that are working there. And at the end of the day, you know, the executive may say, I want production increased to 1,000 cars a day in our Fremont, California plant. Does he go out to Fremont, California and personally build 1,000 cars? You know, I think that people are suffering from the terminal stupids here. The scripture tells you plainly he's got billions and billions of angels. He's got lots of hired help. Now, how much can he accomplish in 24 hours with a billion hired help? Well, let me tell you a little story here. There's a group of people here in the United States, we call them Amish, A-M-I-S-H, these Amish people. And they're kind of peculiar, they dress strange. They've got funny clothes, and they're all farmers. And you don't find any of them carpenters, plumbers, and electricians. They don't do that. Well, they are carpenters. That's what I'm going to tell you a story about. They're carpenters, and God, they're good. They're good. They're machinists, but they don't use electricity. And they don't use chainsaws, but they burn wood. Isn't that crazy? You know, they split firewood and they make wood. They do everything that everybody else does, but they do it in a funny way. Well, anyway, these people organize themselves, and they're great builders. These people are just phenomenal. And one day they build a barn up in Ohio, and they brought 600 workers to the job site. 600 workers. Now, I'm an old-timey contractor, and I can manage about 30 people. That's it. Boy, when you get more than 30 people around me, I lose control, and I don't know what the hell to do next. But these Amish people are organized, and they build a barn. They started at 6 o'clock in the morning, and 12 hours later, the barn was completed. They built an entire barn without electricity. They do it all by hand. They use hand drills. They use hand saws. Now, nobody that I know of, you know, that's familiar with the Amish would sit here and say, these Amish people are lying hypocrites, and you can't believe anything they say, and they cannot build a barn in one day. Oh, my God, not only can they build a barn in one day, they can build a big barn in one day. I'm not talking about, you know, a 10-foot by 12-foot building here. I'm talking about a barn. I'm talking about a building 210 feet long and 70 feet wide and 40 foot tall. That's four stories, 40 feet tall at the roof peak. And those boys can come out and do it, 600 of them, all working together. I don't know how they organize themselves, don't ask me, but they go to work on that sucker, and by God, in 12 hours' time, they'll erect that barn. Now, if Amish people can do that here on planet Earth, why would we believe that God, the Creator, could not accomplish these feats, these creative, what word are we looking for here, these miracles? These events? Why would we believe that he couldn't do that? How many angels does it take to create the dry land on one planet, planet Earth? I don't have a clue. I don't know if it takes 6,000, 6 million, or 6 billion angels to do that job. How long did it take the angels to create North America out of the oceans? I don't know. How did they do that? I don't know. I wasn't there. And God does not fill us in on the details. All he told us is that in his office, he brought in the foreman and he said, and George Gordon said to Jeff, I want you to go up to the North 40 and build the fence from the corral out to the corner. And Mr. Gordon went out to the North 40 3 days later, and it was done. And Mr. Gordon said, and he saw the fence, and it was good. And then praised his foreman and the hired help. So that's all we're dealing with here is cause and effect, boys and girls. And to say, you know, for higher criticism, or you and I or somebody else to say, that's impossible. That couldn't happen. What in the hell do we know about impossible? You know, I can remember as a kid, we had a fiction going on. It was called Buck Rogers. It was in the funny books. It was in the comic pages that we would be traveling out into outer space. That's in the 1940s. And here we are in my lifetime traveling into outer space. You know, Buck Rogers is not nearly as fictional as we imagined. 100, 200, 300 years ago, people said, man will never fly. One day, some guy put some hot air into a bag, and he's got a balloon, and it flies. Some time goes by, and some people make a machine, and it flies. Today, we've got F-14 Tomcats flying off of, or F-16 Tomcats flying off of aircraft carriers. We don't call that miraculous, but we're able to do it, aren't we? Now, the people 200 or 300 years ago would have said, that's impossible, I can't be done. What in the hell do they know about what can or can't be done? What in the hell do you know about what can or can't be done? Now let's go on to number 3 here. The most stupendous series of events ever recorded in one paragraph is found in the first chapter of the book of Genesis, verses 9 to 13. In the thrilling words that face this page, we're now reading the inspired written example, a record in words so simple that a child can comprehend them. 3 of the amazing acts of creation. I mean, you could just take a kid 8 years old, and you can read, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear. And it was so. 3 marvelous events in just 120 words are here recounted in the divine record, and so clearly are these events portrayed that all of the libraries of the world can't more clearly convey the message. Surely the equal of this paragraph is not to be found in any purely human book. You don't find men writing words like this. In simple as well as concise language, this tale is told, for in the 120 words of this clear-cut statement, 100 of them are words of one syllable. One syllable words. Human wisdom is not thus expressed. You know, we've got here in our U.S. code, we've got a tax system, and we call it Title 26. It must have 15 volumes. To write our tax system, God comes along and says, I want one-tenth. God comes along and says, thou shalt not steal. And he said more than the entirety of the U.S. code in 4 words. I mean, you talk about simplicity. And this guy is the champion of simple. He just comes right out and says, now this is the way it is. Here's where the rubber meets the road. This is where the bear does it. And, you know, you can sit there and say, well, I don't believe it. Well, I don't care. I'm not here to convince you. I'm just said, I'm going to come here and prove to you that this is the way the game was played. This is what we prove. This is what happens when we go into the laboratory and we produce the scientific experiments to document and demonstrate. This is where it's at. And you're looking at it every day, but, you know, the average guy doesn't recognize a miracle when he sees it. Light is matter. When it comes and hits a rock called glass, it goes right through it without any damage. Now, why don't you take your new Ford automobile and drive it through an 18-wheel truck at the intersection without any damage? And you say, well, that's impossible. Well, yeah, that's... I don't know how to do it. But one day, Jesus, after he'd been resurrected, came back, and the apostles, the disciples, they were in a locked room, and he walked right through the wall, and he appeared in the midst of them. How in the hell do you do that? Well, in scientific theory, we know that it's possible because the space between each atom, each electron, each neutron, each proton, there's a lot of space in there. And in theory, you could walk right through there. It's like driving a spaceship through space. I mean, you know, if you could miss all of those atoms and protons and neutrons, all of those moons and astral bodies out there, you could do it. You could drive it right through there. I don't know how to do that, but that doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't. Jesus walked on water. We call that a miracle. I don't know how he did that. I cannot walk on water. Hell, I can't even swim, and I can't even float. I sink. That's how bad I am. But that doesn't mean that somebody like Mark Spitz can't swim, that he can't, you know, swim pretty fast. So this argument, I don't believe it because I can't do it, you know, is poppycock. Wake up and smell the coffee here. We're talking about a guy here that's able to do some things that we can't do. And in some cases, we have learned to do them. For instance, back in Job's day, 1700 BC, God asked Job 40 scientific questions. Job couldn't answer any of them. Today, we can do three of them. I mean, we can't do all 40 yet. That doesn't mean that we won't learn how. That doesn't mean that those are miracles. It doesn't mean that a 747 flying through the air is a miracle. It's law. It's what we call aerodynamics. We have to follow certain laws in order to get that result. If you're trying to fly your hot water heater through, I think you're going to be disappointed. Now, I got a hot water heater over here. And it's a great tool, and it's a great invention, but it won't fly. But if you were to take that same metal, and if you were to fashion it, and if you were to change it, and if you were to conform to the laws of aerodynamics, I wouldn't be a bit surprised. But what some skilled fellow might be able to take that water heater, meld it down, refabricate it, change it, and create something, you know, like an engine to put on an airplane and fly it through the air. So what we call miracles today, you know, they're miraculous to some people, but they're not miraculous to others. And just because infidelity can't do something, and then they come to you and I and they say, hey, that's impossible, that doesn't mean that it's impossible. So the concepts that I'm bringing to your attention here are brought to us in Genesis 1 and 2. He did not explain who the foreman was or how many angels it took to do it. I don't think that God got his hands dirty in the creation of the land masses on planet Earth. I think he ordered it done. I think he sent it down through channels. I think he started with Gabriel and Michael, and he said, get yourselves organized, because here's what I want done on the third day. And then when he said, all right, guys, now let it be done. And by the end of the day, it was done. Now, the Amish needed 600 guys. The story I'm telling you, I'm not pulling your leg here. The Amish, actually, it was in Ohio. They actually built this huge barn, and they did it in 12 hours. And those of us that are in the construction business, we are absolutely amazed. I don't know of any contractor anywhere that can duplicate what those Amish people do. And they do it without electricity. They do it without power tools. They do it all by hand. And they do it in 12 hours. They just put enough hands to work. And they organize those hands in such a way that the barn goes up, and it goes up in 12 hours. Believe it or not, as old Ripley would say. Hey, let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, then we invite you to go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call us direct and ask. The number is 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about modern science and the Genesis record. Let me give you a reminder that this guy, Harry Rimmer, wrote a series of books. I don't know exactly how many, but hell, there's probably 20 of them, and most of them are done on science. And they're done with the from the perspective of the Bible, done from the perspective of the Scripture, the science contained in the Bible. Like Joshua's Long Day. I've done that program here on the Law Hour and on at least twice. And Infidelity, they'll laugh and hoot and holler, and they jump up and down. And preachers, you know, they'll tell you, well, we don't believe that, and so on. It's scientifically provable. Joshua's Long Day, the world stopped. The earth stopped its rotation for a day. 23 hours and 20 minutes the first time, and about 40 minutes the second time. Twice. Didn't do it once. He did it twice. Now, a lot of times I hear people, you know, they'll say, they gasp a little bit, like Judy Hartson used to, and then they kind of gasp, and they say, oh, I don't believe that. Now, that's really stretching things. And again, as I pointed out, it's, now, what in the hell makes you believe that that's a miracle or that's impossible? Although there's 160 miracles described in the Bible. You know, things, events, you know, like raising people from the dead that we call a miracle. Well, let me ask you this. Which is the harder thing to do? Creating a human being out of dirt, or raising a dead human body back to life? It would seem like to me that the tougher of the two tasks would be to create a human being like Adam out of the raw elements of the earth the first time out. Creating Eve out of Adam's rib, that was quite a trick. That isn't something that you see done every day. Not even Houdini does that. Not even the President of the United States can do things like that. But again, just because the President of the United States lacks that capacity or that ability doesn't mean that this God can't or doesn't, does it? So raising people from the dead, I mean, you've already got the body there, all the elements are there, you're lacking life. Whatever this thing called life is. Now, I'm a farmer, and I kill animals all the time. Yeah, I'm a killer. I kill them all the time. Kill chickens and cows and sheep and one thing and another. And I never fail to be amazed at the phenomenon called death. I mean, here I've got this sheep, and he's alive, and he's healthy, and he's jumping around, and he's just, you know, just full of life. And I stick a knife into his throat, and I cut his throat, and I drain his blood out of him. And in about 5 minutes' time, all the life is gone, and now I've got a corpse. And a time or two, I've said, well, I changed my mind. I got the wrong sheep here. Let's put the blood back into this one. Let's sew up that hole in his throat, in his neck. And let's put him back out into the pasture so that he can eat grass and he can grow and live and go on living. We'll kill him later. And I want to get that one over there. That's the one I really wanted to kill. And you know, we're totally unable to restore life to this animal. Now, I can see life, and I don't know what it is. And if you do, send me an email. Tell me. Explain it to me. I don't know what gravity is. I see what it does. I don't know what the hell light is. Now, there's just a lot of things out there, boys and girls, that we just don't know what they are. We know they are there. We can see them, hear them, taste them, touch them, and smell them. But there's some things we can't do. Now, we can kill the sheep, but we cannot bring him back to life. Now, our Creator says, I kill and I make alive. This guy can kill the sheep and he can bring him back to life. I say that's a pretty good trick. Whether you call it a trick, whether you call it a miracle, whether you, you know, hang a label on it, put some syllables together and some phonetic sounds, and come up with some new word and describe that for us. But you can't do it and I can't do it. But there is a guy out there that can and does and has. Because you see, every time you look at something that's living, you're looking at the miracle of life. And then if you want to test it, kill it. And then look at your total helplessness, your total incapacity to bring it back to life. So here again, the creation is the proof of God. And in Romans chapter 1, he tells you that. He says, hey, listen, the Creator is greater than the creation. The creation's great. It's pretty nifty. It's a neat thing to behold. But the Creator is greater than his creation. He tells you that very plainly. So he says, well, don't run around worshiping the sun, moon, and stars. You know, like on Easter Sunday morning when you go out and worship the sun at Easter sunrise service, he says, don't do that. That's kind of stupid. I created the sun, and it's a neat invention, but it's not God. It's not the Creator. I'm the Creator. You should worship me. Worship. The word worship means obey, practice. Jesus made an observation one time. He says, why do you people call me Lord, Lord, and do not those things which I say? I think that's a pretty good question. We go to church, and we talk about Jesus, and we knock on people's doors and pester them by reminding them that they're not saved and that we need to straighten that out and get you saved here. But we don't do anything he tells us. And then we ridicule and make fun of him. You know, he sends us a message and he says, let me explain that to you. And we say, we think you're a lying sack of you know what. We call him a liar. I don't think that's very intelligent. And in Romans chapter 1, he tells you that that isn't very intelligent. And then there's going to be a result that comes from that. And the people that are running around here, we call them higher critics. And they're lying. They're liars is what they are. And as Mark Twain used to say, they're damn liars. They know better. They ought to know better, and they do know better. Now, your experience or your excuse might be ignorance. But if you'll go to bravenewbookstore.com, I think they can get you a copy of this book called Modern Science and the Genesis Record, which just zeroes right in on these two chapters, Genesis 1 and 2, and goes through them one at a time. Now, I can't read you the whole book here. That'd be kind of counterproductive and take us hours and hours and hours. But I can give you the highlights of it. I can point to it, and I can say, now, this guy, he's got all the ducks in a row right here. Okay, bravenewbookstore.com. And the name of the book, Modern Science and the Genesis Record, guy's name is Harry Rimmer. Old book. And if you get it from a used bookstore and they have to get it from South Africa or someplace, it might cost you $50. I don't know. Might cost you 10, might cost you 50. But if your question is Genesis 1 and 2 scientifically accurate and correct, the answer is yes, it is. And here's the proof. All right, now with that out of the way, let me give you a little bit more. The exponents of the age theory seem to forget the weakness of their argument in that this day of Yom was half dark and half light. Did these first created plants live 250,000 years in absolute darkness? That would be a miracle indeed. Also, we note that the direct rays of the sun did not reach the earth until the fourth day. Did these plants survive a sunless age of a quarter of a million years or so? It would be highly probable that they would survive a mere 24 hours in a sunless condition, but scarcely for a great geological era. Not being able to make a dogmatic decision as to the length of that day, we will take position that it was most probably one solar day, 24 hours, and then pass on to a consideration of the events of that day, just as they are infallibly revealed in the writing of Moses. Let me remind you, Moses did not write this. Come on. Moses did not know any of this. When Moses wrote these five books, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, it was approximately 2,500 years after these events had transpired. Moses was not present on the first, second, or third day of creation. And the scripture tells you the answer to that. All scripture, write down the word all, A-L-L. How much is encompassed by all? Can you tell me? And the scripture says all scripture is given by inspiration of God, and it's profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction. So if you want some doctrine, reproof, correction, and instruction, can't get a better source than the scripture. And all is 100%. How's that? Just three letters, all, all, A-L-L, all. That means Genesis 1 and 2 was written by God. Although he told his foreman, Moses, he said, "Hey, Moses, get over here. Bring some pen and paper with you. Write this down. Take some dictation here." And Moses wrote it down. Now, Moses gets some credit here. Moses wrote it down. But he didn't think this up. And he wasn't there. And he wasn't reporting something that he didn't see, didn't hear, and didn't know about. It was revealed to him. Otherwise, he wouldn't have known it. Just like today. This is what we call revelation. See, you might not have known this until I just told you today. I didn't know it until I read Rimmer's book. Rimmer didn't know it until he learned it. Now remember, we can only do this two ways. You either have to have it revealed to you, or you have to go experience it. You have to go out and experiment with it. Now, experience and experimentation, that's fine. I'm not opposed to that. I'm not knocking science. We don't have any bitch with science. We just have a bitch with lying philosophers. That's what our problem is. Lying philosophers and lying preachers. That's where our problem lies. And if those guys hadn't come in here and poisoned your mind and told you that this guy's lying to you, then you wouldn't have any reason to disbelieve him. And then he told you the truth, and so truth plus truth equals truth. Now here's the other side of that coin. If you want to prove something, and somebody says, "Oh, that guy's lying to you," you listen to that guy, and then you test it. And you will know them by their fruits. See how simple this is? You'll know them by their fruits. Now, I started the program. I said, now take a look at Vivian Westerman. Lovely girl. Was that girl a knockout when she was 16 years old? I'm telling you, Elizabeth Taylor didn't have anything on Vivian. Now, let me tell you, she was in my ninth grade math class. Well, anyway, Vivian got pregnant before school let out, you know, in the senior year. In fact, she got pregnant in our freshman year, as I recall. Freshman, yeah, it was a, pretty sure it was freshman year. didn't graduate from school. And so then, then the lying charlatans came in and said, we got to have sex education in school. Now that we've got sex education in school, we got 10% of the females in public school in America pregnant before graduation. You will know them by their fruits. Now, we know who the lying charlatans are, and it wasn't God. He told you, thou shalt not commit adultery. Remember? He gave you the straight skinny. He told us what Vivian needed to know. Vivian didn't listen. That's assuming that anybody ever told her. No, I'm not sure that anybody ever told her. But in any event, we can observe the results. And so the results that we're getting are bad. When you see Hurricane Katrina come ashore, that's bad results. You may sit there and say, I don't know why we got that. So let me tell you. The answer is contained in the scripture. It's in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. It's very simple and straightforward. Our Creator gave us certain instructions, and He said, here's 10 commandments, do this. And He said, if you don't do that, here's what's going to happen. You're not going to get rain in due season. Hurricane Katrina is a lot of rain, but it's not rain in due season. And as a result of that, it causes a lot of damage. If you want a lot of damage, if you want a lot of curses, if you want God on your ass, kicking it up between your eyebrows, what you need to do is to violate the law. That's called sin. Now, these preachers, they talk a lot about sin. They don't know what it is. So, write it down. I'm going to tell you. In 1 John 3, verse 4, tells you the answer right there. You got it right from a plumber. It says, sin is the transgression of the law. Now, transgression means a violation of. You know, you go out and you speed, the speed limit's 40, and you drive 50. That's a transgression of the law. You are breaking the law. You're violating the law. So then Ranger Rick comes out, gives you a ticket, and says, hey, take this down to John Jacobs and pay the fine. And that's our local judge here, John Jacobs. And he's going to fine you $50 for speeding through Gainesville. See? All right, so now God comes along and He says, now thou shalt not commit adultery. Now, premarital pregnancy is a penalty that you pay. And divorce is accompanied by alimony and child support, which is the penalty that you pay. Life is filled with choices and life is filled with conclusions. And these conclusions sometimes are good and sometimes they're bad. And if it's a bad conclusion, then that's a penalty. You don't have to be real smart to figure that out. Hurricane Katrina is a penalty. Now, the gainsayers, now they come along, the higher critics, and they say, oh, no, that's just time and chance. No, it isn't. No. If you want to take a look at time and chance, we go to the scripture, and God explains that to you. It's in Ecclesiastes, about chapter 10 or 12. Let's see if I can find that. Here's Proverbs. Ecclesiastes should just be right after. Yeah, here we are. Right after Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. And there's just one statement in here, and it says, dealing with time and chance. See if I can find it here. Here it is. Whatsoever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might, for there's no work, nor device, nor knowledge, nor wisdom in the grave where you go. And I returned and saw under the sun that the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, neither yet bread to the wise, nor yet riches to the men of understanding, nor yet favor to men of skill. But time and chance happens to them all. Time and chance. That's an accident. If you're living under the terms of the contract, under the terms of the contract that you see in Exodus 19:16 through 24:8, then you're not under time and chance, you're under the law. And if you're under the law, then you're under the benefits of the law, which are explained in the first 15 verses of those two chapters. If you do this, here's what's going to happen to you. You're going to get these benefits. But if you don't do this, here's what's going to happen to you, and you're going to get these curses. just cause and effect. That's all we're dealing with here, cause and effect. So when God gave us the report in Genesis 1 and 2, he gave us a true report, and we needed to have the report so that we could understand where this creation came from. That's the purpose for Genesis 1 and 2. The Creator wants you to know where you came from. I created you. I want you to understand that. Just like Adam, when he looked around, when he woke up, when he came to life and he looked around, he didn't know jack diddly squat. You know, he looked at those trees and God came over and said, that's quite an invention over there. That's called a tree, Adam. Come on over here. Let me show you. This is called an orange tree. Different trees look different. Can you see that? Can you see this orange tree looks different from that apple tree? Now, take a bite of this orange. And I'm sure Adam took a bite of the orange and he spit it out and he says, oh my God, that's terrible. Yeah, that's because that's the peeling, and the peeling is pretty bitter. It's not really good to eat. Here, take this apple. Try this one. And Adam tried the apple. Hey, that tastes pretty good. And you can eat the peeling. See? So it doesn't take you very long, but, you know, somebody had to show you, didn't they? Have you ever ate orange peeling? Test it. Go try it. Go experiment. That's science. See how you like it. Now go eat an apple. See, you can eat apple peeling. It tastes pretty good. But that orange peeling, that doesn't taste good. So now that tells us we have to peel. We got to take that off. And then, and I'm sure that there was an egg, and he must have gave him an egg and said, here, eat this egg. Well, when he ate the egg with the egg shell, it didn't taste near as good as when he cracked it and ate the egg without the egg shell. I mean, you know, these are things you have to learn. Adam had to learn these things. The Scripture, the Bible, is a book of instruction. You needed to learn these things. And so the higher critics come along and say, don't read the Bible. You can't believe it. It's full of error, especially scientific error. Well, okay, we were all right before the higher critics came along and poisoned our minds. That's what our problem is. So I wanted to come along and say, well, wait a minute. This guy, Harry Rimmer, now, he's got a pretty good book out. And he says, no, Genesis 1 and 2 isn't a lie at all. It's the truth. Just like Vivian, just like thou shalt not commit adultery. Hey, listen, you can learn by the School of Hard Knocks if you need to, but you can also learn from Revelation. If you want to learn, learn from my mistakes. Now, my old daddy was a pretty wise old guy, and he said to me one time, he said, the next time you get a wild hair up your hind end, you come and ask me how that came out when I did it, when I tried it. And I'll tell you how it worked when I tried it. And if it worked out pretty good, then you can go do it and you'll probably get the same result. But if I tell you that I got a bad result from it, then that'll give you some advance warning. He gave me another piece of advice, and I'll pass it on to you. He said, you can't beat the School of Hard Knocks for education. He said, the School of Hard Knocks is the best teacher God ever put breath into. But he said, it's a God-awful hard way to learn. If you can learn from the experiences of others by revelation, you'll be a mile ahead of everybody. So I just wanted to pass that along to you so that you too could learn by revelation. If you can't learn by revelation, then you'll learn. You're gonna learn. It may take a little pain, suffering, anguish, and agony, but you'll learn. All right, this book again, Modern Science and the Genesis Record. The guy's name is Harry Rimmer, and remember, you want to go to BraveNewBookstore.com, Austin, Texas. BraveNewBookstore.com. Now I'm out of time, and then I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We are sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. And if you'd like more information about us, why don't you go to our website, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there and remind you that we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.